available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I am Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout.com network. We are the Podcast of Champions, and one of us is not in a box this week, so that is good.
I am not underwater in a box pulling a hoodie.
People asking. Yeah. Yeah, it's been a great run. We're doing an early show because it's Thanksgiving week. Happy holidays to everyone. Hope you guys eat lots of turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes or whatever you eat. If you're a vegan household, very sorry. But, you know, whatever you eat, the tofurkey. Have you had that, Dave? I don't know. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, I think that's a thing. You know what the trick is with all vegan foods is don't eat the things that are trying to pretend to be like, you know, meaty dishes. Eat the things that are like designed to be just vegan, you know, like nice salads and things.
But yeah.
Don't like try to eat some of the like mimicry food because that stuff tastes like cardboard. It's real bad.
So don't do that. That's our holiday tip from the podcast of Champions.
If you're having a vegan Thanksgiving, don't eat the fake turkey. Eat some nice, like, I don't know, rice dish or something.
Right. And tweet it. If you have a good vegan dish, why don't you tweet us? You can do that at Pac-12 Podcast. Not sure we'll respond to many vegan dishes, but who knows? Let's see.
We probably won't. Yeah. I mean, just being honest, we'll probably be in a food coma somewhere. Who knows?
The tryptophan going nuts. Yeah, I'm deep frying my birds, Dave. I don't know. Do you ever do that? It's pretty good.
Yeah, I've had deep fried turkey before. I think actually at a tailgate for a UCLA game one year, it fell soon after Thanksgiving, and there was a bunch of leftover turkeys that we just cooked in a variety of ways.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it was great.
That's good stuff. Well, okay, so just to get a hold of us, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. Tweet us, like I said, at pac12podcast. Websites, pac12podcast.com. Our voicemail number, 641-715-3900, extension 734. 972, we're on iTunes, we're on Audio Boom, we're on Google Play, all that kind of fun stuff. So different ways to get a hold of us. Tell your friends. Do you got a friend that likes Pac-12 football? Tell them about Dave and Ryan. Tell them about the Podcast of Champions.
If you just have a friend, I mean, we can be their first introduction to Pac-12 football.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I mean, if I was introduced to Pac-12 football, you know, in my nascent days as like a 5-year-old and I just heard us talking, I'd be like, yep, I'm in. Let's do it. let's follow this crazy, crazy league.
It is a crazy league. Don't really know what to make of it. We're going to, just to let you know what we're doing today, we'll recap all of week 12. Talk about our picks. We got to talk about those a lot because if I win, we need to talk about them more. Right, Dave?
That's not. I'm going to, when we cover one of these games, I'm literally going to spend the entire time talking about a decision to go for two that really, really screwed me.
So we'll do that. And then we'll preview week 13. There's actually 7 games in week 13. I think we have one question. We're doing it earlier in the week, so we didn't get as many emails and stuff. And I like to give a shout out to the Pac-12 football players of the week. Maybe the toughest guy, Sefalufau, Dave, offensive player of the week for Colorado. I mean, one of the toughest quarterbacks I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. One of the, certainly the toughest in the Pac-12 over the last 4 years. That's for sure. He once again got knocked out of this game. I think, you know, you give any of the other 11 quarterbacks in this league that moment, they're probably sitting out the rest of the game. He comes back on the field, like literally the next series, and led him to victory. So that was pretty cool to see.
Good for him. Then this guy, you know, when we were talking about our favorite players on each team, I should have said this. Nick Fisher, he's a DB for Colorado. You're like, who's that? Like, yeah, I never heard of the guy. So he's the Pac-12 player of the week.
Backup safety, Nick Fisher.
Yes, because he's a backup. And he was forced to play. So I think he had like 26 snaps or something like that, like all season. And then he had like 57 or something in the game and had a big game too. I did not vote for, I was trying to, you know, I thought that was a good story, but it wasn't like he had like two pick sixes or anything, but, I guess people liked the story. So he gets the defensive player of the week.
Hey, that's pretty good. He played really, really well. He was a big part of their kind of shutting down Washington State in the second half. We'll get to that game, but that was just super impressive across the board. So I'm pretty pleased that two of my Buff Stampede players, made the cut there.
That's yeah. Cool. That was a big one for you, the Buff.
As a big, longtime Colorado fan, like 10 games.
Buff Stampede. So two Colorado players for offense and defense, and then Utah gets the, special team. So Mitch, Wishnowski, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And it was kind of a weak, pool to choose from special teams.
Yeah, it was
teams.
One of those by default weeks that we talked about last week.
It was like, oh, like three punts were down inside that, you know, it was like something like that. Like, okay, that's great, I guess. You can be back close special, you know, but he's a stud, obviously. Utah's great with the,
this is crazy because one of his punts, I'm distinctly remembering one of his punts being returned by Dylan Mitchell for like 45 yards that set up an Oregon touchdown.
Well,
like, why, give it to Andy Phillips for making four extra points. I mean, why Wishnowski? Somebody break this down for me because I watched enough of this game to know what happened, but I didn't watch enough of this game to break down the punts.
Yeah, I did not either. So I'm not sure where that came from. I have my own reasons for voting where I didn't vote for him either, but you know, hey, just, I try to do it if it's like, if you have a huge game against Rice, like if McCaffrey has a great game against Rice next week, it's like, you played Rice. You know, if it's a big game, you know, it's the Colorado beating someone good or Washington State beating someone, you know, whatever. Like, okay, I try to put more merit behind that, I guess you could say, or more weight behind it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Racking up bad or big statistical totals against bad teams is nothing. I mean, it's fine. It's great. Everybody should eat a cupcake from now, every now and then, but I don't think it should rack up too many awards.
Or if it's a losing effort, you know, it's like, which you give the punter of a team that lost, like the special teams player of the week award. I'm like, not really.
No,
but that doesn't
sell subscriptions.
I only get one vote, so I can't make that. Yeah, we should do our own, I guess. We could do our own, Dave. I don't know, but then the Pac-12 would be mad at us because it would become, but it would become more popular than the actual Pac-12 one. And then it'd be a bummer. They'd be mad at us.
I feel like in a few years, this will no longer be the Pac-12 conference, but the Pac-12 podcast.
Our corporate entity of the Pac-12 podcast we're gonna takes it over.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be naming all the awards. Great.
The Pac-12 conference was purchased today by Podcast of Champions LLC.
By a couple of assholes. This is weird.
Well, we're hoping that Pac-12 doesn't go in that direction, but it's not, doesn't seem to be losing ground with the rest of the Power Five and not gaining ground. So
that was a little bit of a downer. Let's talk some games.
Let's talk some games. Okay. Well, speaking of, we already started to get into, Oregon and Utah, but this was crazy. This started off a crazy day, six games on Saturday for the Pac-12, Dave. Oregon and Utah kind of didn't go the way you thought it would.
No, Oregon upset Utah 30-28. This was a bizarre game because I watched a lot of the first half and this was a very painful first half. It was 7-3 at halftime. And then, I think I was watching something else in the third quarter when it was still pretty dry. And then you come back in the fourth quarter and suddenly it's a touchdown bonanza. Like this was a 14-10 game after three and then it finished 30-28. And the final five drives for each team, so total. So it was 17-14 Oregon, and then it went, it was 14-10 Utah, and it went touchdown Oregon, touchdown Utah, touchdown Oregon, touchdown Utah, touchdown Oregon. It was wild here at the end. And it ended on this kind of really crazy pass, where Justin Herbert threw a dime to Darren Carrington in the back corner of the end zone, and it was initially ruled, out of bounds, but then, on replay, you could easily see that his foot had probably an inch of space between it and the white line. And he made the catch, scored the touchdown. Utah, they put up a nice defensive stand there at the end, but it wasn't quite enough. the real weird thing for me watching this game was, you know, statistically, Utah actually ran the ball fairly well. Looking at it again, 37 carries for 218 yards and, you know, almost 6 yards per carry. But it really didn't feel like they were running as well as they should have against what was an abysmal Oregon run defense. This should have been a 300-yard rushing day for a pretty good Utah rushing attack, and it just wasn't. And I thought that kind of told the tale. Like I talked about earlier, Dylan Mitchell had a really nice punt return at one point that set up an Oregon score. And in one of these, like, two-point games back and forth like this, that kind of play is huge. But, you know, frankly, Oregon played pretty well. Justin Herbert had probably his best game of the season. And that was bound to happen for a true freshman who's as talented as he is, and he's pretty obviously talented. He was bound to have a really nice performance. It came in this one. And I think this was a sign that, you know, Oregon isn't quite dead in the water. They haven't quite given up on the season yet. And they got a nice win.
Yeah, and I mean, I hate when people say it was a tale of two halves, but you know what, Dave?
It's one of those sports writery things, like referring to something as a microcosm of a season.
Yeah.
It's just one of those sports writery things that you got to do. You got to do it.
It was. But, you know, if you were watching early, you got the feeling like, hey, Oregon can win this game because they were breaking tackles. They had good drives that were getting into Utah territory, but they kept screwing up and they would only get 3 points. They end up missing like a 31 yard field goal before the half. They left a lot of points on the table in the first half, and it's 7-3. And you're like, Utah defense is probably just going to take over. These were the opportunities that Oregon was going to have and probably wasn't going to go on. And, but then obviously, like you said, there was a touchdown bonanza in the second half. A lot of these calls just seemed to go against Oregon, you know, like it was almost like the Pac-12 was like, you know, it'd be better if Utah wins this game. I mean, there was like whistles all, you know, they would call the play dead. That one Utah touchdown, like they called the play dead when the guy touched the ball and they recovered in the end zone.
That was bizarre. That was so weird.
That was weird. There was a targeting that completely wasn't targeting and they called it targeting anyway. It looked like he just led with a shoulder, like on a block. Who was that? Nelson? Was that, Charles Nelson or something? I think it was against
him. Yeah.
And then, the last second touchdown was pretty amazing though. They called that against Oregon too, but the replay at least, overran it. But you had Royce Freeman was back 165 yards. This probably ended up saving Mark Helfrich's job. Justin Herbert, you know.
Do we think so?
I kind of do. I kind of think that this is a big enough win that
We'll talk in the preview, but okay. What if they lose? Like, what if they're 4-8 and they lose the Civil War?
Yeah, I mean, that would be bad too. But you got the promise of, like, Herbert had 4 total touchdowns in this one, over 300 yards.
He'd be really good for another coach too.
Yeah. This was Oregon's first road win, which is crazy.
I'm not big on, you know, advocating for guys losing their jobs, but I kind of am. And They've been really bad a lot of this year, and frankly, I know we've got a lot of Utah listeners on here. Utah was probably playing over its head quite a bit this year. They won a 1-point game over BYU, a 4-point game over USC that was damn crazy. Like USC had that game in hand, and then Utah just kind of did some weird stuff in the second half. Didn't beat Arizona by a whole lot. Lost to Cal. Barely beat Oregon State on the road. Had to score 52 points to beat a bad UCLA team. Lost to Washington. Beat up on ASU. You know, Utah's having a nice year, but I don't know if this is like beating. Like if Oregon walked in and beat up on, I don't even know who. If they'd gone to Washington and beaten them, that's a real win. But this one, you know, I don't know how dissimilar these teams actually are.
Yeah, Utah is now 1-3 against the Pac-12 North. So, little struggles there. Our buddy Joe Williams, 149 yards and a touchdown out of retirement. But, you kind of felt like he should have had 200, right? Like against this Oregon defense.
That's the thing.
It was like, almost like he underperformed.
Yeah. I thought, Utah's offense definitely played like way under what it can do. And they should have been able to run the ball a ton more. Not even just Joe Williams, but just kind of across the board, they should have been able to run for a lot more. I don't think Troy Williams took advantage enough in the run game. He had 10 carries for 40 yards, but that was not just carries. That was a couple of sacks, but they just didn't generate a whole lot. You know, Joe Williams had a nice day, 6.5 yards per carry, but he's had games this year where he's had, like, I think 12 plus yards per carry. So this was kind of, I mean, it was a 150-yard day, but it was a little pedestrian, a little bit.
Man, we're rough. We both end up getting this one wrong. We both took,
That's actually where this is coming from, as everyone knows. It's just pure bitterness.
We've started the last 2 weeks, started off like the first game out of the shoot, like wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's not always good. I had a nice recovery. You had an okay recovery, but we'll talk about all those when we get to it. But yeah, we thought that, Utah would cover here, but, you know, Oregon played well. And that's why, you know, I kind of get the feeling that all the Pac-12 coaches are safe now with this win. Maybe, you know, Oregon loses to Oregon State this weekend. Something happens. I think like Sonny Dykes, he might leave or something, but I don't think he's going to get, you know, so I just kind of feel like we're going to be in the same place next year with coaches, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of shakes loose.
All right. So that was, you know, that, and that had a play in the Pac-12 South, title race because Utah is now eliminated. Well, they lost and, that actually kept, helped to keep USC's hopes of winning the South alive. So Utah's out of it from that one. And then the next one that had a lot to do with the Pac-12 North and South, Washington State and Colorado.
Yeah, so this game was actually a ton of fun to watch. One of the most competitive games I think I've watched all year. Washington State going at Colorado. They ended up losing by 14, but it really wasn't. I don't think that kind of told the tale. Colorado won 38-24. This was just, I mean, it was a back and forth game. Just a lot of fun, really high level play on both sides for long portions of this game. There were, so many different score changes. Even, you know, Washington State at one point was up 24-21 and then Colorado scored 17 unanswered. You have to talk about Sefa Lufau's performance because, so we talked, we alluded to this in, talking about his, the award he won this week, but I mean, just so tough. He took some hits in this one, had to carry the ball 23 times for 108 yards and three touchdowns. His statistical performance is nuts. So passing the ball, he was pretty good. 27 of 41 for 345 yards. And then he ran the ball 23 times for 108 yards. So by himself, he accounted for what, 64 of Colorado's offensive plays out of 100. So that's a pretty healthy percentage. But he got knocked out of this game at one point, taking a hit that, seemed to cause him some hip issue, had to go to the locker room, but then came back out, after one series for Steve Montez. Might have been just one play for Steven Montez. I can't even remember. Like one or two plays. And then, he came back in and went right back to running the ball. Really, really impressive showing from him. I thought Philip Lindsay was great. Love watching him run. He's like I talked about in the preview show, he's 5'8", like a 170, and he runs with so much power and anger. It is the funniest thing to see, but it's also pretty awesome. But on the Washington State side, I thought they played really, really well. They ran the ball really well on Colorado. They probably should have run the ball a little bit more. Luke Falk played really well, and honestly, his stat line doesn't indicate how well he played because he had to deal with a bunch of drops. He had at least one touchdown that was dropped in the end zone. Gabe Marks just kind of lost sight of the ball, hit him in the chest, but he just didn't see it quite right. But he should have had a much better completion percentage than he did. He was 26 of 53, so under 50%, but that does not tell you what he was doing in this game. His ball placement was off the hook. I'm gushing about this game. Just it was a lot of fun to watch back and forth. And, Colorado is now 9-2, 7-1 in conference and very much in control of its own destiny heading into a game against Utah this week.
Yeah, it was a crazy game, obviously. And it's funny. We talked about, Washington State and how the, you know, Mike Leach had his theory on the coin toss and stuff. But they ended up losing the toss. That might have been the undoing.
That should have been the omen. That should have been the omen.
Yeah, the Colorado is actually 10-1 in coin tosses. Is that nuts?
Crazy. These were probably the best two coin toss teams in the nation, right?
Yeah, I think Washington State's now 8-3.
That's pretty good. I mean, you're talking about a combined, 18-4 there?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And Colorado is also now 10-1 against the spread. And Dave, so we had this one differently. Dave had this one. I did not. So I started off the day 0-2, which is not, luckily.
Let's not talk about your comeback story. All right. Don't Juju Smith me. Don't go into the locker room and then come back out and like catch a bunch of balls. Like, don't do that to me. All right.
But it was great game. I really felt in the beginning that Washington State was in control. And I think the key point was that they were up 14-7. And, Luke Falk completed a long pass. They were in Washington State territory, and that pass that hit Marks in the, you know, in the hands or whatever, the chest. And then they ended up not scoring. I think they missed a field goal on that drive. So instead of being it should have been 21-7, it's still 14-7. And it just seemed to kind of go south. After that, you know, it just wasn't working. Lou Fowl had a huge game. Philip Lindsay, like you said, the little man, 144 yards, couple of touchdowns. And I think that the home field really came alive for Colorado. Mike McIntyre, he had his guys fired up, and it was like a championship sort of atmosphere there. And, you know, really, if you look at third downs, Washington State was leading the Pac-12. I think they were like right around 50% or right up just about 50%. And they were only 26% on third down in this game. And so the Colorado defense played really well, too. You know, like you said, holding Falk under 50% passing. Just a great overall performance by Colorado. Better than I thought. And, you know, literally watching the game in the first, you know, quarter and a half, I just felt, okay, Washington State has this. And Colorado never – they just took a few punches and came right back.
Yeah, no, and it was definitely kind of that boxing thing where they just took – you know, Washington State's best shot in the first half. And admittedly, that should have been probably a little bit more lopsided than it was. You know, Washington State missed a field goal. They had the one dropped, you know, near touchdown pass. So they could have been down, you know, 7 to 10 points at the half. That easily could have been the case. Instead, they were only down 3. But then Colorado, I mean, I don't think Washington State was going to win this game the way Colorado played in the second half. That was one of the better halves of football. You know, I've seen a Pac-12 team play this year. Colorado, you know, beat up on a really good Washington State team. And ultimately, like, you know, I think I don't have the breakdown of the first half stats, but I'd say it was fairly even, but it finished. I mean, this was a dominant win for Colorado. They had 603 total yards to 462 for Washington State. You know, they ran quite a bit more plays, but that was also a sign of them just kind of controlling the ball pretty well. This was a pretty comprehensive win for them, and I think it sets them up for have a little bit of momentum going into next week. And this was a ton of fun to watch. I would watch this game again in 2 weeks if it wanted to come back.
Yeah, I'm really curious to watch where Colorado ends up in the college football playoff rankings. I mean, this looks like a legit top 10 team right now, and they're there already. But it's just beating Washington State is a really good win. Could still control their own destiny in the Pac-12 South. Mike McIntyre, struggled the first few years and has a lot of seniors, a lot of guys returning on this team, and he's making it work.
Yeah, so maybe we work that into our preview part, but I'm interested to talk about which Pac-12 teams you think are still legitimately even half alive for the playoff. Because I think Colorado's half alive.
I think they are,
Some crazy stuff would need to happen, but... like, not joking, I think they have a decent enough chance. If they win out and just a couple of upsets happen, I think the Pac-12 champion will have a pretty good claim.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Okay, so let's move on. We had another Pac-12 Network game up next. This was, and Dave loves this, big game, Stanford and Cal.
Yeah, so Stanford won this one 45-31. I think I've got right here. Stanford they kind of did what I thought they were going to do going into this one. It took them a little bit longer than it did against Oregon, but they essentially put up similar stats to what they did against Oregon. They ran the ball insanely well. Averaged 7 yards a carry. Christian McCaffrey had a huge game, 31 carries for 284 yards and 3 touchdowns. Keller Chris was once again better than he was in those first two games where he started. Had a couple of touchdowns, averaged 8.6 yards per attempt. He was legitimately good. They just allowed a little bit more defensively than I thought against Cal. Cal came out, and Davis Webb, I think, is progressively getting kind of back to full health. He looked pretty good in the first half here, and they had it pretty close. You know, this easily could have been a tie game at halftime. Instead, it was Stanford ahead by three, but then Stanford just kind of poured it on in the second half, ran the ball really, really well. They're looking, I mean, it's unfortunate for Cal because I think Cal is improving a little bit from their midseason lull, but Stanford has clearly improved a ton from where they were at the beginning of the year. I think they finally, you know, they might have something in Keller Crist. He ran the ball pretty well in this one, too. Yeah, I think Stanford's looking like a team that's poised for a bounce back season next year, a bounce back from 9-3. Every team in the Pac-12 should be so lucky to bounce back from 9-3. But Stanford looks like they've righted their ship, after, you know, hitting a bit of a lull this season. And, yeah, not much more to say. I think Cal, they played hard, certainly harder than, well, not harder, but certainly better than another team did in a rivalry game that we'll get to in a little bit. just didn't have enough. But yeah, I think they have to be at least a little pleased that they were able to generate that kind of offense against good defense. You know, I don't think they'd scored over 30 points against a decent defense this year, and Stanford's certainly decent. So, that's, you know, small comfort, but that's something.
It was, the Christian McCaffrey show. So he looked back. He's probably still running somewhere. You know, he was just running all over. So this was his career high. He never had a 284-yard rushing day, three touchdowns, which was, you know, obviously huge. You know, he had, I forget what the receiving yardage was. It wasn't great. I mean, it was, he
22.
Added, yeah, so he added something there. Nothing really in the return game. So I think Cal did a good job on special teams, kind of limiting, kicking out of bounds, whatever you got to do to limit him. But, you know, if all you got to do is hand him the ball, and that's kind of what they did. You're good. It's going to be a long, long day for you. And, this was a nice game for Stanford. I think you look at the way they're playing, right now, they're playing pretty good football. And if this is your down year, like you said, like, you know, you should be so lucky to have a down year like this. You know, but I got to give Kraut credit. They had some neat wrinkles in there. Did you see, Malik Morris, catching some passes there? Big hunt.
Yeah, that was sick.
Big number 99. He weighed over 300 pounds, so that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I love seeing that. I love seeing big men get some love out there.
Yeah, didn't get a touchdown, but you know, this was very Stanford-like, and they just kind of took care of business, and we both got this one right. They covered the spread. It was 11. You know, they ended up winning by 14, so props to us for getting that one right. But it definitely was on the cusp of, you know, Cal could have easily covered this game. But you know, I think Stanford was just in control enough that they took care of business. This is seven straight wins now for Stanford over Cal. It seems like Stanford has a winning streak against like every team in the Pac-12. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. It seems like, a pretty long one against a lot of teams, including Cal and another team that plays that I cover.
I bet. USC snuck a win in there somewhere, but they've had, you know, Stanford's won a lot against USC too.
Yeah, USC won one of those classic David Shaw games like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the one where he broke out the Wildcat like 70 times trying to just see if he could play like a one score game with a team that was much inferior talent wise?
Yes. That was great. Yeah, they got into the red zone like 9 times and he scored like 4 points or something stupid. I don't know, something like that. Not 4 points.
I think it was like a win expectancy game where like, I think, Bill Connolly's stats had it as like a 98% Stanford win expectancy. Like there was no, USC had no business winning that game, but they did anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, Stanford's had a lot of success, especially against the California schools. And yeah, like you said, like this is a down year. Okay. I take that. And we're showing, we're showing Stanford some love here in the, power rankings. We'll get to that.
Hey, don't tease that. All right.
I'm sorry. We can't tease it even.
No, not really.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we can. They're 5 now.
Yeah.
Okay.
8-3. Hey, I didn't give it away. I was just teasing. I'm showing some love.
Yeah. We're just gonna give it away. We're a free shop here.
All right. So big game. One of the rivalry games. This was not exactly a rivalry game. Arizona State and Washington.
So this is the one that really screwed me because so ASU, let's just break this down right here. Cause I didn't see this play live, but I want to talk about it because I think it's important to talk about.
Get it off your chest.
So ASU is down 30-3. The spread on this game was 27 points?
27.
Right. So they were at the spread. So it was 30-3. Keep that in mind. This is deep. So this is now deep into the fourth quarter. ASU has no chance of winning this game. None. They're done. They drive down the field, going, whatever, 65 yards. They score a touchdown. And then they go for two. They go for two. They're down 30-10 and they, 30-9 and they go for two. To put them down 30-11. And literally I was watching that score update while I was watching some other game that was a much better played game. And I was like, that's going to screw me. That right there is going to screw me because now it's a 19-point game. Washington isn't going to pour it on because they still have their working assumption that they're not going to beat a team by more than they beat Oregon this year. And so they're only going to score like once or twice more. And ASU is going to score enough that this is going to finish a 26-point game. And it did. So break down for me why in the world ASU went for two here.
Well, I was... I'm pretty good friends with this kid. So I said, Coach, Mr. Graham, Coach Graham, can you go for two? Because I really need to beat Dave. And yeah. So that was great. I mean, I love if it's a 27-point spread and you end up losing by 26, that's a huge win for me. I love that. That's amazing. Thank you, Todd Graham. You're my favorite. Okay, so here's the thing though. Like,
yeah.
Arizona State should have been closer at some point. I really felt that there was two ways to win this game if you pick the points. One, Washington jumps out to some crazy lead and then they take their foot off the gas. Kind of like what they did against Oregon State, right? Like they were up 40-3 or something and then just backed off.
Uh huh.
Two, Arizona State actually scores and like, you know, Washington wins by three touchdowns, but doesn't cover. And it was turning out to be the former because of ASU looked like they should have been able to score. They had a pick six that got called back because of a penalty. And then they throw a pick in the end zone themselves. So they score no points out of that. And then Washington just
kicked a 22-yard field goal and a 24-yard field goal to open the second half. That's what happened. If they do touchdowns on those, we're not even having this conversation right now. I'm just doing a dance. I'm doing a celebratory dance during this entire discussion. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm sitting here trying to break down why ASU went for two with 10 minutes to go in this game.
Right. Well, that was the smart play.
Did he have money on this? That was the smart play. Being down by 19 versus being down 20 is that significant. You know, frankly, I thought Jake Browning kind of struggled to start this game. Washington legitimately should have been tearing apart this ASU pass defense. They weren't really able to. Jake Browning was fine statistically by the end, but he threw a couple of picks. He's still in a little bit of a funk after that USC game.
A little bit. I mean, but he threw 338 yards, two touchdowns. The pick six wasn't pretty, and I didn't even get to see what the penalty was. Did you see how that got called back or whatever?
No, I didn't see what the actual call was.
Yeah, but it was whatever. So then the interception in the end zone was amazing. That one-handed, I mean, that had to be the play of the day.
That was so, so cool.
The play of the day. Cool. And then Washington scores like a long play, like the next play or something. So it was like a 14-point swing like that, which is basically half the spread. But like you said, Washington just was in control. Browning didn't have his best day. Maybe a little bit of a hangover from the USC game, but, 338 yards and you're like, he didn't play great. A couple of picks. Miles Gaskin, 127 yards and a touchdown. Washington, didn't they score on an onside kick too? It's like, so there was some fortune going Washington's way as well, Dave.
Whatever.
They returned an onside kick for a touchdown. Like, come on.
Dude, it was, so Washington had 539 yards. Arizona State had 245.
Oof.
They should have won this by like 40 points. ASU ran for 15 yards on 27 carries.
That's terrible.
They should have won this game by like 50.
ASU has two great running backs too. It's like, that just baffles me.
Yeah, I think if you combined the like running back talent for ASU and UCLA and you put them on anybody else's team, they would be running so well this year. But, pair of garbage offensive lines and, schemes that aren't doing them any favors whatsoever.
You know the last time Washington beat Arizona State was 2001?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's one of those weird streaks that no one knows about.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I don't know how, I mean, if they've missed each other. But, well,
they probably missed each other a few times, but there was a round robin for like 6 years, wasn't there?
Yeah. Man. So great cover for me. Yay.
This is the one that made me sick, you know, because I was like, all right, I can deal with the Oregon loss because that was fine because we both had it. And I can deal with the UCLA-USC thing because, you know, whatever. But this one made me sick.
It was obviously, as you know, 27-point spread is huge. It's almost like a coin flip at that point. So it could have gone either way. But luckily... All right. Okay. Sorry. We don't need to rub it in Dave's face, but it was very nice. I was very happy that happened after my 0-2 start. I thought it was going to be a rough day. I was like, if I could just get to 500, it'd be good. Okay. So this one was the one I was at, USC and UCLA.
All right. So USC went to the Rose Bowl, won 36-14. UCLA shot its wad in the first half, scored 14 fairly quick ones, actually had a 14-7 lead, and then USC rattled off 29 straight points, basically turned off the faucet on UCLA's offense in general. I looked it up. I think UCLA had 47 or 49 yards rushing in the first quarter, and then they had like 7 in the remainder of the game. So that was bad. UCLA's defense was good going into this game, allowed USC to be super efficient. USC, I think, had a 9-minute drive at one point. So I'm going to break this one down because I talked about it in the stories I wrote, but I want to break it down here again because, this was egregious surrender football. UCLA gets the ball after USC goes up 30-14 to start the second half, and they are finally moving the ball a little bit after a terrible second quarter. Mike Vaifel completes a couple of passes to former Trojan Caleb Wilson, who gets him down the field a little bit. They're near midfield, and they've got a 2nd-and-2, a 3rd-and-2, and then a 4th-and-1 at the UCLA 46. First up, Bolua run from me, runs lateral to the line of scrimmage. He fumbles, but he recovers, so now it's 3rd-and-2. Then they take their 245-pound running back and run him on a stretch play against the fastest defense they've played. Naturally, he only gains a yard. It's 4th-and-1, and at this point you say, okay, obviously they're going to go for it because they're down 16 points, and USC has just been scoring left and right for the last few drives. They punt. And that basically surrendered the game because then USC had an 18-play, 73-yard drive, 9 minutes, and score a field goal, and that was it. Then it was you know 13 minutes to go in the game, and UCLA's offense was done. So I thought they surrendered the game right there. I thought that was pretty egregious and some very bad strategic decision making by UCLA staff.
Yeah, it's you know the way UCLA came out of the gate was great. I mean, I thought they played really well. There was, the crowd was into it. It was inspired. And running the football well. This is a team that has been terrible running football, but last week there was a spark, right? I mean, you got to see them run the ball better.
That spark was the lighter fluid that is Oregon State's rush defense.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. But they came out running the ball well. I think 3 straight runs and got a couple first downs. And then long pass, to Jordan Lasley, touchdown. It was like, boom. And the guy with the long name, like, I don't know why he shouldn't run him the ball, that you give him the ball all the time.
You want to know how many carries he had? You want to know?
How many?
He had 5. He had 5 carries. 5 carries. And he had like 3 of them or 4 of them in the first quarter.
Yeah, he was great. And then they never went back to him for some reason, which was.
It's almost like there's no rhyme or reason to UCLA's offensive attack this year.
Yeah, that was a little weird, but you know, I thought UCLA was playing well at first and, you know, USC just, you know, seemed to, you know, have some screw ups early on. Maybe there was a little hangover from beating Washington and then they kind of settled in. I thought there was great pressure on Sam Darnold to start. I think it was Kenny Young got a sack.
Yeah.
Early on, but then and so you felt like
a couple of QB pressures, and then nothing for a very long time.
Yeah, and, you know, Sam Darnold's really hard to sack, and so when UCLA got an early one, I tweeted, this could be a big factor because we haven't seen him face that kind of pass rush before, and especially an individual pass rushing stud like McKinley. I thought there were some great plays by the defensive line, like Vander Doe's my dude, you know. Trucked one of the dude, you know, I thought there were some good plays, but they weren't able to get the constant pressure. And when they were there, this is what Darnold does so well is it's not that he just gets away, especially on third down. I mean, he was so efficient on third down. He'll get away and then he'll make a big play downfield. It's not like he just runs and runs out of bounds and avoids a sack, but only gains 2 yards.
There was one of those that was just, you could see it just kind of take the air out of the entire defense because they almost had him sacked. Like there were two guys converging on him. I think they even crushed him after the play. And he basically threw a ball across his body, and just perfectly in the receiver's hands right as he was falling out of bounds. And you could just see it take the air and just deflate the entire defense. He's got that knack. And he's done that in many games this year. Just the ability to kind of scramble around. Really, really tired. I mean, unheralded thing for a quarterback who's got the kind of feet and feel that Darnold does. He exhausts defensive linemen.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch Takarist McKinley, like, literally 3 minutes into the third quarter, like, they just had halftime. He just had 20 minutes off where he could just kind of rest his feet and hang out. He's got his hands on his hips just heaving because he's running after Darnold the whole time. And they did a really nice job of rolling away from McKinley. This is a nicely schemed game from USC's offense. You have to give them a ton of credit because they understood that McKinley was probably the best pass rusher they've played, and they just rolled away from him. All night, Darnold was just kind of going the other way and kept McKinley just on the move all night, and that was very tough for UCLA to deal with because they don't have another really effective pass rusher besides him.
I actually talked to Tyson Helton, the quarterback coach, and he's like the passing game coordinator or whatever that means. But about that, he's like, yeah, we know he's good in motion. And so we do that a lot. So they try to move him around. And it just seems to be, he does a pretty good job, I think, after he's moving to set his feet and throw. But he can, you know, throw off the back foot and stuff if he has to. But it's just, it kind of keeps the front seven of the opposing defense on their toes because they're just never sure where he's going to be. And if they do get to him, he can get away. And it has to be frustrating because you're like chasing this dude all over the place. And, it's not only that he can get away, but he can get away and make a play, down the field. So I thought he had an efficient game, but really when you saw UCLA offense come out of the gate the way they did through the first 17 minutes of the game, you're like, okay, this can be a game. And after that, it was just, I don't know what happened. I mean, no points in the second half.
Yeah.
2 of 11 on third down for the game. Only 10 first downs the whole game and just 16 minutes of time of possession. Like, that's pretty awful.
Yeah. I think what they had in mind was that the defense was going to be a lot better than it was because when UCLA went off of a script at the beginning of the game, like UCLA's script was really good.
Yeah.
They had a nicely scripted, I think, first couple of drives. And I think they were hoping that whatever they scored off of that would be basically enough. I think they were hoping to maybe get one more score out of this. And, you know, I think for UCLA, they can't think in terms of, okay, we're going to put up 30 points. That's just not going to happen against a good defense this year, not with the way UCLA's offense is. But I think they were thinking, okay, we'll put up like 21, 24, maybe in that range, and then we'll just count on our defense to hold off USC. And frankly, the defense just wasn't quite up to it. And I mean, obviously the offense wasn't either, but that's an obvious statement at this point. But the defense wasn't up to it. And I thought, honestly, if USC hadn't wasted 15 carries on Justin Davis, who clearly is not 100% and clearly just didn't have it this game, it could have been worse. If Ronald Jones got 10 more carries, he might have had 60 more yards and 2 more touchdowns. I thought, you know, UCLA was helped a little bit by that. But frankly, I mean, the defense just played, you know, the defense probably played its C game and they needed to play their A-plus game. And they didn't quite have it in this game. And that was pretty much the tale.
Yeah, USC had, you know, more than 500 yards, which people were asking me before the game. They said over under 500. I said definitely under. So I was wrong on that. But the score wasn't as bad as the statistics look. USC ended up kicking a bunch of field goals. And yeah, there was definitely still a chance for a backdoor cover in this one.
Yeah, that was really what I was counting on here at the end, because that's, you know, that's all I care about, honestly, is winning this game with absolutely no stakes between me and Ryan. And it really
means nothing, and we care about it so much.
I thought it was going to happen. I thought when USC went up 33-14, I had a feeling UCLA was going to drive for just the meaningless touchdown, make it 33-21, and have that be the final. But unfortunately, I couldn't even count on them for that. So they did have a decent drive there, though. Like, down 33-14,
yeah.
They had a drive where they got to, yeah, it was to the USC 44 with, like, 11 to go. And I was like, you know, this could be it. Because if they continue driving at, like, methodical pace, it'll be, like, 7 minutes to go and they'll be down 12. And USC might just decide to, like, run the whole time then and not score again. So that's what I was counting on. I was counting on 33-12.
It was a late night in the Rose Bowl. I got home at like 1:30.
33-21, sorry.
33-21, okay, yeah. But yeah, it was, I hate this game at night. I mean,
it should never be at night.
No, 71,000 there, and it was just like, it just wasn't the same, you know. When I got in there early, you could see the mountains, and it was just the beautiful setting. But by the time all the fans get there, it's dark, and it's just like you could be in a dome. It didn't really matter, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I there was one other night game recently. Was that the 50-0 game that was a night game, or was it 2010?
I think it was 2010 was the night game where there was like stabbings and stuff.
Yeah, that was not good. Yeah, the 2011 game was at USC. Yeah, 2010 was not good. There was that brawl. There was all kinds of bad stuff. You can't let this game be at night because this is probably the drunkest the two fan bases get. I don't know about USC and Notre Dame, but this is probably close for both fan bases, and it's, you know, it's in-city rivalry, the whole deal. You just can't do that, you know? Yeah, it's not good. And then the golf, you know, the people have to clean up the golf course. They've got a little bit less time to do it because, you know, it's a night game.
That's true.
Know? Yeah.
All right, we got one more. This was a Pac-12 Network game. That we always have one of these battles, Dave, between our number 11 and number 12 team. And this year wasn't quite as exciting. Oregon State and Arizona.
Yeah. So this was, I think kind of what we thought it was going to be. So Oregon State won 42-17. I think we both had Oregon State covering. I don't know if we necessarily thought they would win by 25 points, but I wasn't shocked by the amount.
Yeah, it was a 6.5-point spread, and we were both all over Oregon State on this.
Yeah, Oregon State just, I mean, if you want to talk about a team that has packed it in for the season, that would be your Arizona Wildcats. They are now 0-8 in conference, 2-9 overall. They're terrible. I think they're worse than that Oregon State team last year that went winless in conference. I'd love to have a real tournament. Like a theoretical tournament between all of the crappy Pac-12 teams from the last 4 years, but I think Arizona might be the crappiest. They might be worse than that. I think there was a winless Colorado team in there. I think they're worse than that too. They're really bad. Anyway, Oregon State, Marcus McMarion, maybe Oregon State stumbled on its quarterback because he was 16 of 19, 5 touchdowns, averaged nearly 14 yards per attempt. Ryan Nall came back for this one. Didn't look super hobbled. 23 carries for 124 yards and a touchdown. Artavis Pierce ran pretty well as his backup. You know, Arizona ran the ball okay, couldn't pass at all, and it really just didn't do enough. Oregon State just kind of dominated them offensively, and this was not a good Oregon State offense. It was fine-ish, but not good. And, you know, racking up, 475 yards? And 6 touchdowns. That'll put up 25-point win on Arizona.
I dedicated as much time as I could to this. It was going on at the same time. You know, I was in the press box, but I had my iPad and was watching it. And it seemed like every time I looked up, it was like Marcus McMarion threw another touchdown pass. He actually had 5 touchdown passes in this game, Dave, on 19 attempts.
Yeah.
So that's
efficiency right there.
That's pretty good. There was really sick. Did you see that one-handed catch? I think it was Hernandez made in the,
that was so cool.
That was pretty awesome. Ryan Nall did get the play, 124 yards and a touchdown on 23 carries. So that was, you know, that's good. I think Oregon State, and I was tweeting this, they looked like they were up 35-17 late in the fourth quarter, and then they ran a fake field goal, which I thought was kind of weird.
I love that. I love that. You know, you're Oregon State. You're going to be a 3 or 4 win team this year. Just have some fun.
They had some fun with it. Rough. 0-8 for Arizona in the Pac-12 right now. They're 1-10 against the spread, Dave. Like, that is pretty awful. These ones are just almost free money. Like, we're good at these now. By the time of the end of the year, we're doing this with the Pac-12. You kind of know, like, okay, this is definitely going to happen. We're right on most of these because it was just like, yeah, this is not happening for Arizona.
No, crazy things can happen in the Territorial Cup, but, they're probably not winning that one either. So they're looking at an 0-9 conference season. And, you know, if we're talking about, I don't think Rich Rod's on any kind of hot seat just because, I mean, it was as recent as last offseason where they were like trying to prevent him from leaving to like South Carolina. But Jesus, man, 2-10, 0-9 in conference. That's not going to put butts in the seat.
No, not an ideal situation. But Oregon State is, you know, we have them, you know, we had them at 11. We'll reveal, you know, soon our, you know, Podcast of Champions power rankings, but they're 2-6 in conference. So 2 conference wins, not terrible. I think Gary Anderson's kind of got them, you know, in the right spot. It's just, you know, they're getting better. There have been some tough losses, but they play so well at home, Dave. They're like a, I'd like to see what their number is covering the spread at home. It's got to be really good. I'm usually always picking them when they're at home.
Because I think I can. So Idaho State, they won by 30. I would imagine that was a cover because nobody thought Oregon State was good, so they probably weren't even favored by 30. Boise State at home, they lost by 14. They might have just barely not covered in that one. I think Boise State was minus 13, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
They covered against Cal because they won.
Yeah.
They covered against Utah because they only lost by 5. They covered against Washington State because they only lost by 4. They covered this game for sure. So I think they're 4 or 5. Maybe, I mean, I don't know what Boise State's line was. I can't remember, but, they might have been perfect at home.
Yeah. It's a team that plays well at home. So they got that. And I think there's building blocks for the Beavers to build on for next year. And this is going to be a huge one against Oregon because Oregon's playing better. Obviously the Beavers just would love it. Doesn't matter. I mean, Oregon could be 0-11 and they would still love beating them, but, that's one you want to watch. That Civil War is going to be fun.
Yeah. It looks like Boise State did close, minus 13 in that one. So.
Okay. So, you know, within a point of being undefeated against the spread at home, that's pretty good. All right.
And that one actually depends on when you got it, because it looks like it was minus 16, 16 and a half at one point that week. So I'm going to give them perfect.
Nice. Go Beavs. I like that. So 11 versus 12, but it really wasn't that close. Arizona has separated themselves. It's just one of those things where you just want the season to end and you kind of fix whatever you need to fix and move on and try it again next year.
Yeah.
All right, so that was our week 12 recap. And just to let you know, our picks. Yeah, I think I got Dave again on this one. So I was 4-2, Dave was 3-3. But both of us still well above 500. Both of us well above making you money.
We've got a crazy bowl season coming up. I'm within striking distance.
Oh, yeah. I usually, like, I get in a rhythm with these Pac-12 games. The bowls, I just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. Okay. So I think it's time, Dave, for our
Pac-12 roundup.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, baby.
And, we go in reverse order and we had a request. I'm going to try to write down our picks. There's a lot of going on while we're doing all this stuff. So I'll write down our picks in our little notebook. And then at the end, I'll recap all of them. If you want to go to your bookie or you're on your way to Vegas or something, you would have definitely made money if you've been listening to us all year. So. We'll try to help out, but we'll go in reverse order. So we'll reveal our power rankings as we go. And a lot of rivalry games, there's actually 7 games because there's a couple non-conference games as well. But our first one, this is the one in the desert. So we have
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All That's our number 10 team taking on our number 12 team, as we had mentioned.
Arizona Wildcats.
All right, so this one's on at 6:30 on Friday, 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. It's in Tucson, so keep that in mind. But ASU is only favored by 3, which is peculiar. ASU's had some issues running the ball this year, for sure. Arizona's had issues doing anything on a football field. ASU does a few things better than Arizona does anything. Arizona State, not great against the run last week, but generally speaking, pretty competent against the run. Arizona's, like, the one thing they can do offensively is run the ball. So I think ASU takes that side of it, and I don't really see much else that's dangerous about Arizona. Arizona State's not good. We have them number 10. They could absolutely lose to pretty much any other Pac-12 team. I just don't think they're losing to Arizona. Give me ASU. I'll lay those points.
Yeah, there's, you know, Arizona's covered one game against the spread all year. I can't predict that, you know, it's going to happen in the rivalry game. It's not like Arizona State is great. They didn't score a whole lot of points against Washington. That was obviously a lot tougher team, but they just didn't look all that good, you know, not being able to run the football. I think they will be able to do a little bit more against Arizona. But yeah, I want to see Arizona succeed. I want, you know, to get Rich Rod to get a win, but they haven't done it yet. And it's hard to, like, put your neck out there and expect them to do it this week. It seems like it's going to be one of those things. You wrap up the season on Friday and you go clean out your locker and just go figure things out in the off season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see every Pac-12 team emerge with a win this year. I just don't see it happening. I think Arizona State probably wins big, actually, because I think Arizona's just done.
Yeah, so 3-point spread just seems a little, I mean, it doesn't make much sense.
It's weird. It's for sure weird. Here's what I'll say. I think Arizona State wins big. Would I bet on this game? Not a chance. Like, not a chance. Not in a million years would I bet on this game.
Yeah. But we got to do it because this is what we do.
Yeah. Well, okay. We put no money on this. We're counting on your money to be put on.
Right. I keep thinking about it. I'm like, you know, if we're doing this well, we should, like, just put a little fun together and then start, like, betting for real. And then, of course, our picks would go crazy bad at that point.
There was a year where I think I went 11-1 UCLA against the spread. And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, why am I? And then I was like, wait, would that be some sort of, like, insider trading because I cover the team? Like, would that be bad just to, like, bet based on my insider knowledge of the program? And
no.
I mean, probably, right? Is that unethical?
I don't think so. I mean, sports betting is pretty unethical to begin with, so.
That's a moralist perspective. That's great. Sports
well,
betting is awesome.
It's illegal, though, like in most states, so.
In some places.
Like, for everywhere.
For various arbitrary interstate commerce reasons. Blue laws, but anyway. I don't think Arizona wins this, but I would not bet on it. I think ASU would think.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, so next up, it's not really it's kind of a rivalry. I mean, they have the same fight song, so we'll go with number 9.
UCLA Bruins.
And number 8.
California Golden Bears.
Oh, the who gives a crap bowl. 4 p.m. on ESPN2 on Saturday. UCLA is somehow favored in a football game again. -3 on the road at Cal. Both teams are 4-7. Both teams are 2-6 in the Pac-12. Both teams are fresh off of playing their heated rivals. And both teams could not, I can only imagine, care at all about this game whatsoever. I think it's going to be a terrible football game. And I'm not really jumping out on a limb there because every UCLA football game has been in some form or another a terrible football game this year. In theory, if you're breaking this down by matchups, which I think is a foolish way to break this game down, UCLA matches up pretty well against Cal. Their secondary is pretty good, and Cal, about the one thing they can do at this point in the year is throw the ball. So in theory, UCLA can shut down part of Cal's offense, and in theory, UCLA might be able to run the ball a little bit on Cal the same way they were able to run the ball a little bit on Oregon State. That's all in theory. I think this game is really going to come down to which team shows up and cares, because I don't think it's a given that either team is going to do that. If both teams show up and don't care, this is going to be, whew, oh boy, it's not going to be, you know, I feel for every UCLA fan out there who's like, wait, there's another game we have to watch now. And I'm sure for Cal fans too. Give me Cal. They're at home. In the Who Cares Bowl, I'm going to go with the home team. Give me Cal.
It's hard because UCLA is a road favorite here. 3 points. And your theory about who cares, I think is very poignant. It's very important. I mean, really, both teams could come in and not really giving a crap. But the UCLA defense, I still believe in, Dave. And I think you can get to Davis Webb, and I think you can, you know, after chasing around Sam Darnold being frustrated, I don't think you're going to get the same kind of frustration. I kind of get the feeling, Dave, that UCLA front's going to get a bunch of sacks in this one. And, you know, maybe run the ball a little bit better. Maybe they stick with the kid with the long name longer than 4 or 5 carries. He's from Fresno. Is he from Fresno?
He's from Fresno.
Yeah. I just remember, I think when I was doing the Fresno State site, I went to go talk to him. I was like, how do you say your name? I was like, what? Yeah. And then he ended up committing to UCLA. It was like, oh, well, this kid's way old. I shouldn't be talking about Fresno State if you're going to go to UCLA. But, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I get the feeling that they'll run the football better. I get the feeling the defense is going to play better. So I'm going to take UCLA and lay the 3 on this one. Not feeling great about it, but, I don't know. I got some faith that this defense can step up and, you know, bounce back after a tougher week last week.
Well, good. You've just given me a reason to care about a UCLA football game. Here we go.
So you're going to take, Dave's taking Cal. All right. It's 3 points at home. Like, you know,
something to keep in mind. Until very, very recently, UCLA hadn't won at Cal since like 1999. They, I think there was like, even in the Mora era, so it was 2012, they lost at Cal, and then they played at Cal again in 2014 and finally beat them. But between like 1999 and 2014, they hadn't won at Cal.
All right. Well, we'll see. I've actually been to a Cal-UCLA game up in Berkeley when I was living up there. Like a girl I was dating, I think she went to Cal and we went to the game. And it was, because they do have the same, you know, there's the same song being played and stuff. It was kind of crazy, but it was fun.
Yeah, Cal's is just slower. So like a little bit slower, and probably some musical person can tell me exactly what the issue is, but there's like a different key or something.
Oh, it is? Okay, so it's a little like...
It's a little bit different, and there's no 8 clap at the end, so that adds to it, too.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, UCLA alumni, we just 8 clap at everything. That's all we do. Clapping 8.
We'll see. Okay, so now you care about it. So at least I did that. At least I helped you.
Yeah, you've restored my ability to care.
Okay. Poor Dave. Okay, let's go. So this is they call this one the Civil War, I believe. Number 11.
Oregon State Beavers.
And number 7.
Oregon Ducks.
Oregon shooting up the back half of the Pac-12 podcast power rankings. And keep in mind, everyone out there, if you're a little offended that your team dropped or went up or whatever a little bit, keep in mind, 7 through 11, the same team. Every single team in the power rankings between 7 and 11 is the exact same football team. You could take the players, interchange them, take the schemes, interchange them. They would perform exactly the same.
It's Dave, this is the 6th team, the 5 and 6, the teams that we've mentioned so far. 5 of those 6 teams we've mentioned are 2-6 in conference.
Yeah. Go everyone. This is great. So this is on at 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 network in Corvallis. Oregon is a 3-point road favorite, somewhat like UCLA at Cal. Once again, kind of tricky and weird. I think Oregon, now that they've actually won a game, they beat a, you know, decent Utah team, maybe have a little bit to play for, but I think Oregon State is like 100% on playing for absolute pride at this point. And they know they're playing pretty well right now. They just beat Arizona by a lot. They played competitively in the previous weeks against UCLA and Stanford and, you know, against Utah, against Washington State. They've been right there in a lot of Pac-12 games. I think they see a vulnerable Oregon team this year. And don't forget, Oregon was nowhere near this bad last year, and Oregon State gave them a game It was really, really close. Tie game at one point late in the game. I think Oregon State wins this outright. I think they're going to be able to run the ball really well on Oregon. Ryan Nall should be able to generate a ton of yardage. They'll be able to pass the ball fairly well against them. And while I think Oregon can, you know, generate some points, I could see this being a fairly high scoring game. And I think Oregon State comes out on top at home. They're going to have that crazy Corvallis home crowd, behind them. And, I think they pull off what it'll probably be their first Civil War victory in quite a while. So that'll be really cool.
Yeah, I forgot to look it up. Oregon State hasn't beat Oregon in a long time. So, getting 3 points and they're at home. I like Oregon State. We talked about them covering being, you know, really good at covering at home. I'll take those 3 points, and I think there's a real shot that they win this one, outright. I think Ryan Nall can have a big game. Now, Royce Freeman, he was back last week and he's playing really well. And I think Herbert can, you know, can throw the ball, sling the ball, but Beavs at home. I'm gonna roll with them, Dave. I'll take them, and getting 3 points, I'll take it.
Yeah. So the last time Oregon State won was 2007, a double overtime game in Eugene, and they actually won two straight, 2006, 2007. But since then, has been 8 straight Oregon wins.
Yeah. So that's two. So we had eight straight years of a Democrat in the White House. We're going to switch it. So I think this is the year, Dave. It's like two terms of Oregon winning, and now it's going to be Beavs.
Just going to flip it.
I don't know about for the next 4 years, but I think at home, this one, I think it's going to be a Beavs win. All right. Let's go number 5.
Stanford Cardinal.
Taking on Rice. Woo, woo, or something. They're the Owls, right? we don't have a sound effect for the Owls.
Yeah, they're taking on a food group. So this is on at 5 p.m. on some channel. I'm assuming it's the Pac-12 Network, but for whatever reason, ESPN does not like to tell me what channels these games are on. I believe it's the Pac-12 Network. It should be. It should not be on any other station.
It is on Pac-12 Network. Yes, the 5 p.m. Pac-12 Network.
All right, Rice is garbage again. They were okay for a while, like 6 years ago, but they are bad again. They are 3-8. Stanford, like we've said above, is back to being pretty darn good. They're 8-3. Stanford's favored by 35.5 points. Oh, and knowing nothing about Rice, I still have to figure Stanford's offense is not quite in a state where they're going to cover, 5+ touchdowns against, you know, pretty much anybody at all. So give me Rice and the points here, but Stanford should win big. Literally knowing nothing about Rice, Stanford should win big.
You kind of stole my thunder. Like, I know diddly squat about Rice. Nothing. I do like brown rice. I hear that's better for you than the white rice, so I try to order that when I'm in, like, Chipotle or something. Yeah, but the 30, I mean, Stanford
rice
might not.
Rice is great. It's like a legume. It's great. It's wonderful. Everybody likes rice.
Yeah, but.
Yeah.
Stanford might not score 35.5 points, you know? I'm going to guarantee they won't score exactly 35.5 points, but I don't know. I mean, that's a lot. And we've seen them, you know, last week, you know, they put up 45 against Cal. You know, they could put up 45 again, but is Rice not going to score 10? You know, like so
let's
yeah.
I'm curious now. Let's just look at what, right. Wow. Rice is bad.
I really don't know anything about Rice.
Actually, they're not. Okay, they're fine. So UTSA is a pretty good mid-major. They only lost by 1 to them.
Okay, yeah, they're good. They beat.
They only lost by 4 touchdowns to Baylor at the beginning of the year when Baylor was still okay. They beat UTEP and Charlotte. Hey, beat Prairie View. Beat North. Oh no, they lost to North Texas. North Texas, so bad. But they only lost by 17 to Army.
That's a bowl team this year.
Only lost by 32 to Western Kentucky on the road. And they're a good offense.
Yeah, that's a team that scores a lot. Yeah, I'm taking the 35.5. I'm in.
All right.
I'm in.
All right, yeah, we're riding with the Rice Owls here.
Not that we think you're great, Stanford, and you're going to win this game, but I'm not convinced that you got that much offense in you. We'll see.
Yeah.
They'll probably prove us wrong.
I'm going to watch this game very closely.
Yes. I'm very curious what's going on.
Because it's not opposite a much better game at all. Like, that's not a thing. Oh. Yeah, it is.
Okay, so next we have Now, I don't know. Do you know what this one's called? Do they have a name? Because it was kind of, this is a created rivalry, but number six.
Utah Utes.
And number three, and in Fuego.
Colorado Buffalo.
Which one should this be called?
Was there something in the mountain or something? I don't know. I've heard something, but I don't remember what it was. I apologize. So tweet us and yell at us and tell us we're idiots for not knowing what this is called.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be good. I want to know. If not, we'll work on creating a name. Anyway, 4:30 p.m. on Fox, number 12, Utah, probably not number 12 for much longer, going at number 10, Colorado, probably moving up to number 9, Colorado, to be honest. Colorado's favored by 10.5. This actually opened, I think, at 12.5. Has moved a little bit Utah's way, which I think is right. I don't think this is a 12-point Colorado game. I think it is, you know, roughly more around the 10-point range. Colorado has passed the eye test quite a bit more for me than Utah, but I'm always loath to say that about Utah because Utah takes no issue with winning ugly. They love playing ugly. They love winning ugly games. That's fine. 3-point game, sure, let's do it. So, you know, eye test wise, yeah, I think Colorado's a fundamentally better team, a little bit more balanced, probably better defense and a better offense than Utah. But Utah just kind of, they do those weird little things. They play special teams really, really well. I think this is going to be a relatively close game, until late. And then I think Colorado pulls ahead, kind of like what they did against Washington State. I think they're just riding on such a high right now. That's a little joke about Colorado having legal weed. but they're riding on a little bit of a high right now, after beating Washington State. I think controlling their own destiny. And I think Utah is probably, you know, maybe a little bit dejected after that Oregon, loss. I don't think they're the type of team that would ever, you know, kind of quit to end the season or pack it in just because they are out of the conference title race. I think Kyle Whittingham's too good of a coach and too good of a motivator for that. But I could see a little bit of dejection, that keeps them from maybe, you know, putting together a 100%, you know, type of game where they pull this one out. So give me Colorado, and I will, I'll take Colorado to cover the 10.5.
I'm going to go with you there too. I was kind of going back and forth a little bit on this. If it was 12 or 13, think about it more, but you know, Colorado is just really good against the spread. You watched that game last week. They were fired up, and for a chance to win the Pac-12 South, if you win, I just think that this is going to be a team that plays really well. As long as Sefolu-Fowl can stay upright for most of the game, not that they won't get sacked, just that he doesn't get hurt again. He's such a difference maker. I think they just want to go out on top like this, and it could be a little, you know, demoralizing, for Utah last week. You know, they don't want to, they can be the spoiler, but is that really what do you want to be motivated to play for? So it's a lot of points. But I, you know, Colorado's covered all those spreads for a reason. I kind of think that they'll even have a little extra notch, crank it up an extra notch, Dave. So I will take Colorado lay in the 10.5 as well.
All right. So that'll be the, probably the marquee game on, Saturday. And I know it goes opposite Rice Stanford for everyone out there, but, you know, try to tear away from that game.
All right. So that's going to be a really good one. And then there's another, really, really good one. We call it the Apple Cup here at the Podcast of Champions. Not sure what they call it in the actual game, but we named it the Apple Cup. I thought that was good. Number four,
Washington State Cougars.
And number two,
Washington Huskies.
All right. So this is a 12:30 kick, on Friday on Fox. So this is your great post Thanksgiving, game to watch on the Friday. Everyone gets that day off. And if you don't, I'm sorry. I know it's a shame to say that and then have you not get that off, but pretty much everybody gets that off. Washington's favored by 6, on the road at Washington State. I thought, you know, if Washington State had shown a little bit better against Colorado and maybe Washington had stumbled again a little bit against ASU, this could have been close to a pick 'em. As it is, Washington appears to have righted the ship, so I think that's why you see that Washington favored by 6 thing. The thing that gets lost in last week is that Washington State actually played really, really well, and they are a different home team than they are a road team. They've struggled a little bit on the road, but at home they've been consistently a little bit better. I think I like Washington State here. I think that their offense can give Washington some issues. You know, last year, I think Falk was out for this game, which presented some problems, and Washington won handily. But I think Washington State, with Luke Falk, the way they were playing up to and including that Colorado game, they didn't play poorly. I think they can give Washington some problems. I don't necessarily have Washington State winning outright, but I think they can cover the six. I think this could be a close, kind of really, really fun game between these two teams. And it'll be one game further away from that Crapple Cup in 2008, which would be nice.
Well, I'll give you a chance to catch up a little bit on this one, Dave. I'm going to go with the Huskies on the road. I can easily see them winning by a touchdown. I think the motivation factor will be there for them. Not that Washington State won't be motivated, and they do play a lot better at home. But I just get the feeling, Dave, that this is a chance. They know they could go to the Pac-12 championship game, go to the Rose Bowl, potentially go to the college football playoff, and try to get some style points. If this was a bigger spread, I don't trust Chris Peterson with style points and having to cover. That's why I didn't pick him last week against ASU. But only having to win by six, I could see something like that. It's not going to be like they're going to take their foot off the gas. I think Myles Gaskin has a big game running against Washington State, which is a defense I really like. Jake Browning, another big game. I can see Luke Falk having a good one too, but it's just a better defense that Washington plays. And I think they're going to, you know, give Falk enough problems where he has some success, but has some failures too. And, I think it's going to go to the Huskies. So I'm going to take UW in this one, laying six.
Well, you're wrong, but it's okay.
All right. That's going to be good. So that's the Friday one, right?
That's Black Friday.
So maybe your wife or your husband or whatever, your listeners out there, your husband or wife are out there shopping, you know, trying to get the...
Maybe your husband and your wife. All right. Look, we're not against polygamous relationships.
Oh, yeah, that too. Or both.
Yeah.
All your wives.
Relationships are well and accepted here. Okay.
Yeah. It's fine. Are there polygamists like the other way? Like one woman has like five husbands, or is that never happen?
No, we live in a patriarchy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
No, that's not happening. I'm sure it does. Yeah. Come on.
Somewhere.
Some of that.
Whatever. Whoever's out in your life and they're out Black Friday shopping, you can sit home and watch this game, because I'll definitely be doing that. I have my food coma. I'll probably be making like a turkey sandwich every quarter or so, and just getting ready to watch a lot of football. But it should be good. Apple Cup. We should tell those guys up there that they should call it the Apple Cup, right? We coined. I think
that would be a good thing to call it.
I think we coined that, didn't we, or no?
Yeah, I think that was us. Right? We coined it last year, right?
I like those names. It was funny. They were talking about, I think it was one of the shows I was watching, talking about some of the cool rivalry names. I like the Apple Cup a lot. Like the Egg Bowl, kind of weird to me. Bedlam, though, that's one of my favorites. I think that's a really good one.
Bedlam is great. Bedlam is the best.
Okay, so we got one game left. Man, we're going long again. Well, there's seven games to get to.
I know, it's a lot.
We got number one.
USC Trojans.
And unranked and 4-7 on the year, Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, got to be pot of gold. Something, you know? I mean, who knows? Whatever. It's on at 12:30 on ABC on Saturday. USC is favored by 17 points. Notre Dame is 4-7. They're not good. But they're not quite 4-7 bad. They've lost a lot of one-score games this year. I think every single loss has been by a score. Let's look here. I'm going to look up Notre Dame because, frankly, if I don't have to watch Notre Dame football games, I don't watch Notre Dame football games. They lost by 3 points to a bad Texas team, by 8 points to a bad Michigan State team, by 3 points to a bad Duke team, by 7 points to a not great NC State team, by 7 points to a decent enough Stanford team, by 1 point to a pretty good Navy team, and by 3 points to a decent Virginia Tech team. They're not good. They've been better defensively over the last like 5 weeks, 6 weeks since they got rid of their defensive coordinator. Still not great, and I think USC is playing at a much higher level. 17 points is a lot, but it is at home for USC, and they are clearly peaking in a big way this right now. So I think I like USC to cover the 17.
I'm going to agree with you, Dave. I just can't. I was picking against them to cover these spreads for, you know, the beginning of this winning streak, and I kept getting it wrong. So I'm like, all right, screw it. I'll just pick them. So I'm going to roll. I'm going to pick them until they stop covering. Notre Dame is very good at blowing 17 point leads. I think they've done that like four or five times this year.
Yep.
Literally like 17 points against Virginia Tech and lost. And this happened a whole bunch. They have kept these games close and they've lost them. They're not bowl eligible. They're not a great team. But I could see why if you would take, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, if you were to say, hey, take Notre Dame in the 17 points, I could get that. I mean, I get it. This is a team, they lose, but they lose close. But I just kind of get the feeling coming on the road. No, now you can't be bowl eligible. I don't know. It's a motivating factor being in a rivalry game. You'd like to come out and play well, but just the way USC just comes, it's just kind of a machine right now, you know, that's why we have them ranked number one. And they're, you know, if everything goes to chalk, they're not making the Pac-12 championship game, but they're just playing that high a level of football right now. So I'll take them and lay in the 17. You know, I could see Notre Dame keeping it ugly and close and winning this one. I could see that happening. Not, you know, super likely, but I could see something like that happening. But I just the way USC's playing right now, Dave, I got to take them and lay the points.
For sure. And you know what other team had only lost like pretty much one score games all year before facing USC?
Was that UCLA?
Yeah, it was UCLA. They lost by 22. So there you go.
Yeah.
We got a question? We got a question out there? Is there a question?
Oh, we do. Oh, yeah. Do you want me to read it? You got to.
I don't even have it pulled up.
Okay. Hey, this is Nick from Cyprus, a.k.a. Big Nick 21 USC from the P. Happy early Thanksgiving to you, Ryan, and Dave. Oh, he's acknowledging you, Dave. That's nice. That's nice.
Thanks, Nick.
I don't think he doesn't like you. I think he likes you.
He's just fine. I think he likes me more than you.
He very well could. I don't know. I think I kind of made fun of him on the boards once or something, and then he got mad or said, I don't know, something like that. Or,
I bet.
But I love Nick. And thank you for your service, Nick, and all the other service people out there. Love what you guys do. Quick rundown. Oregon 30, Utah 28. Great game. Does this save Oregon's head coach from being fired? I say yes. Dave says no. Utah blew it. Was it a catch or not? It was. I'm glad Utah lost, which means they cannot win the Pac-12 South. That actually kept USC alive. Apparently, USC players were watching, or some of them were watching it, and then they all got excited, and security had to come because they were all cheering after Oregon won that game. It definitely kept, but it looks like Colorado's rolling. But it did keep USC's hopes alive, at least. Washington State 24, Colorado 38. Yes, Wazoo lost. Colorado won their biggest Pac-12 win. Both these teams will play big games next week. Maybe they see each other in San Francisco. Fair. Stanford 45, Cal with a K, 31. Stanford wins another rivalry game against C. McCaffrey. He's back running for more than 200 yards. Cal, next year they'll play better. Arizona State, 18, Washington, 44. UW with a win against a lower-ranked Pac-12 team. ASU maybe gets 6 wins next week, and that's it. UW, big game next week. That's true. Not big game, because that's Cal Stanford, as Dave loves to say.
We would know if it was a definite article. Then we would say if it was UW, the big game next week, then we would know definitively that he was incorrectly citing it as Stanford Cal. But because he didn't use a definitive article, we are left with ambiguity. And why you use definitive articles.
I feel like you should write a paper on that. That
would I be feel good. Like I should.
All your free time. All right. USC 36, UCLA 14, USC owns LA. Bruin revolution is over. Well, truth be told, it never really began. Mora is overrated. Clay Helton saved himself this season by winning. Fight on. Ryan and Dave, well, maybe in a few years you will have a chance to beat USC, LOL. Oh, so he takes a little dig there, man. UA 17, OSU 42. Didn't watch the toilet bowl game. Frankly, both teams are garbage.
Yeah, Oregon but State's it's all a matter of which one smells the worst.
Yeah, Oregon State's not garbage, but this game was fairly, it was kind of hot garbage, yeah. All right, here's questions. What coaches you think lose their jobs this time next week?
I'm holding out there's a possibility for Markel Frick. Otherwise, I think, pretty much everybody else is safe in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know if he didn't say Pac-12 specifically.
Well, Charlie Strong's already out-ish. I guess it hasn't officially been announced, but he's done.
Orgeron's probably gone at LSU.
I think there's still a chance, but yeah, losing to Florida in a game where they statistically dominated was not good.
No.
Who else gets fired like a gun?
I mean, those are the big ones. There hasn't, you know.
Brian Kelly, is there a chance of that? 4-7, if they get blown by USC, is there even a chance? I think he's probably too close to those to being very good.
Yeah, I think he's just, it's not, you know, he had one bad year, you know, and like you said, they were all like close. It wasn't like you were getting blown out, you know, like that's the problem with Helfrich is that you weren't losing close games. You were getting, you know, you put up 70, you gave up 70 to Washington. That's pretty bad.
Hugh Freeze, if they lose the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State, I think there's a good chance of that one.
It's funny, like Sumlin, like people talk about him. He was number 4 team in the country for the playoff, and then he loses a couple games in a row.
Yeah, but they were ready to do that at the beginning of the year, and they're probably just getting back to their where they were at the beginning of the year. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a too crazy firing season, actually.
No, and it's kind of funny, like if it, you know, Texas, you kind of have a natural, you know, Tom Herman just kind of a natural fit in there. You know, there could be some dominoes, like Houston's job is not a domino job, but like a Jimbo Fisher to Baton Rouge, like that would be a domino job. There would be some crazy stuff happening. So there could be some nutty stuff, but it doesn't look like it too much.
Does Butch Davis get canned? Or not Butch Davis, Butch Jones get canned?
No, my wife is like big into Tennessee. Doesn't sound like that's happening, but there's a lot of people that want him gone.
Is next year like a deep hot seat year for him?
I would think so, because this was the year they were supposed to win the really poor SEC East. So you can't win it this year. Like, when are you going to win? You know, Florida was depleted. They did, you know, he did beat Florida this year. So that was like one, that was a goal. Like, he needed to beat Florida, but that's not like, I mean, if that's what you're hanging your hat on, it's not all that great. But they had lost to Florida like 11 straight years or 12 or something crazy. Last year, they were like winning in the fourth quarter and blew it on a, you know, like a Hail Mary thing. It wasn't even a Hail Mary. It was like a catch over the middle. The guy ran all the way for a touchdown. I mean, it was nuts. So he did beat Florida, but I don't think they'd fire him.
Yeah, I would think any SEC East job has got to be fairly attractive because they're on the right side of that conference.
Yeah.
Basically on the other side of Saban. Hopefully most years you only have to play him once if you are very good.
And if you can avoid him, I mean, the rest of the SEC right now is not very good. Like, even in the West, it's, you know, if you can shine and you don't have to play Alabama until the very end, then you'll be all right. Okay.
I swear to God, Nick and I think just like right along with each other. Cause look at his second question.
Which team is the worst team in the Pac-12 history for the last 5 years? Colorado, Arizona, or Oregon State?
I mean, I'm going Arizona. I think they're the worst. I think this year's Arizona team is worse than those teams.
So is that like a is he talking about a collective of 5 years or?
Yeah. So from the last 5 years, which of these teams is the worst?
But like a single season was the worst, like, or
that's a good question. That's a good question. So a single season, I would say this Arizona team is the worst. Collectively, I think the answer is unfortunately, I think it's the Buffs, right?
It could be. I mean, they're like, how many Pac-12 wins did they have coming in this one?
Because Oregon State was decent in 2012, as recently as 2012. They were like 9-3 or 10-2, something like that.
Last year, Oregon State beat Weber State and San Jose State, and that was it. They were 0-9 in conference. That's pretty bad too. If you're talking year.
That's bad, but I think, I mean, Colorado had some years in there.
Yeah, yeah. Colorado, I think collectively you'd probably go with Colorado.
But let's just take a look. All right. Let's just pull up the old records here. All right. So we're looking at yearly results here. Okay. So Colorado, since 2011 has gone 3-10, 1-11, 4-8, 2-10, and 4-9, and then this year. So, in the last 5 years, basically since 2012, they're 1-11, 4-8, 2-10, 4-9, and 9-2. So I think they're pretty close. Arizona has a Pac-12 South title in there.
Yeah.
And before that, they were like a competent 6 or 7 win program. So I don't think they're the guys. Oregon State. Did you break it down the last 5 years?
No, only just last year they were 0-8, 0-9 in conference and 2-10 overall.
So let's just pull this up. So since 2012, they were 9-4, 7-6, 5-7, 2-10, and then this year. So no contest, it's Colorado.
But, you know, the year's not over, and if Colorado wins the Pac-12 South, like, does that...
That outweighs everything. If they win a Pac-12 South, or if they win the Pac-12, which I think is completely doable, then, yeah, they would be out of that cellar. But as it is right now, I think the last 5 years, even including this year, you've got to say Colorado's been the worst.
But worst single years would either be Arizona this year, and they still have a chance to beat Arizona State, but last year going 0-9 in conference, that's... Because they lost the game to Colorado. That was the chance to get a win. Those would be the two worst single season years in the last five, I believe. I don't think – you didn't say any – there weren't any other worse ones, right?
No, I mean, Colorado's year, they had a winless conference year, but no.
Oh, they did have one too? Okay.
I think so. It was either winless or one loss, but I'm off that page now. Yeah, and Arizona's not even in it. They were 8-5 in 2012, 8-5 in 2013, 10-4 in 2014, and 7-6 last year.
Yeah.
So this is really just one bad year. One very, very bad year.
It was pretty bad. All right, then the last one, he says, last, have you seen a team like USC start 1-3 and then win 8 games straight? Yes, 8 games, they will beat ND by 2+ scores. Like they did ugly. Fight on. Love what you do. Ryan and Dave, don't ruin your life. Fight on. Nick was a little more aggressive in this one.
Yeah, well, he's feeling good. This game a day ago. Probably coming off that win. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we've all seen teams that start a little bit slow and win a bunch of straight games. I think this is probably one of the biggest jumps this year for sure. I think the only other team that would be in the conversation this season is Penn State. They've kind of gone on a run since starting the year a little bit slow, but I think USC has probably outdone them a little bit. It's fairly rare, but I mean, if you're talking about, you know, USC teams, I think, I don't know, what was the breakdown in that 2002 year? Did they lose games at the beginning of the year and then rattle off like a bunch of straight wins?
Yeah, I think they lost to like Kansas State and Washington State and then kept winning after that.
Yeah, so that would be, I guess, something similar.
But the thing was that those were close. I think what's weird, those were close, you know, those were close games they lost. Like USC was getting blown out in the beginning, you know, by, you know, Alabama and stuff like that. So I don't know. We'll see. It's unique because of the coaching deal. Like you don't usually hire a coach like with 2 games left in a season like they did last year. And it wasn't just the 1-3 start. He lost the championship game, and then his first, you know, permanent head coaching, the first game as a permanent head coach was the Pac-12 championship game. He lost to Stanford, got beat pretty bad, and then he loses to Wisconsin in the bowl game, and then starts 1-3. So he's really like a 1-5 coach as a permanent head coach, and now he's won 7 in a row. So it's a weird situation just because USC was in a weird situation with firing Sark, interim coach, when he got hired, AD leaving, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that part of it's more unique. But we've seen a lot of teams kind of start off crappy and then turn it around.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I think it's very good for this year, but I don't think it's necessarily unprecedented.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dave, I think it was pretty good. We went like an hour and a half again. But it was, you know, we had a lot to cover.
Yeah, it was magical.
And I would go magical. I think that,
yeah,
that's right.
I don't, I said that matter of factly because I don't think there was another word to describe it. I think this is a magical podcast. All right.
It was. And I love Rivalry Week. This is going to be fun. So make sure, you know, you could go out and exercise, but why would you want to do that? Stay at home, watch on your TV, or if you want, go to the stadium. If you live, you know, whatever venue you're in, check out some Pac-12 football this weekend. It's going to be good. I love the rivalries.
I love the rivalries like UCLA Cal and Stanford Rice. They're just so good. I love the way the Pac-12 schedules. It's so awesome.
But okay. So there's a lot of things you can bag on the Pac-12 about, but the fact that there's all these geographic natural rivalries is a really cool aspect of the Pac-12. So
yeah, geographic natural rivalries like Stanford Rice, just so good. Make this week so much better.
Fair point. Dave, just getting little digs in.
Just I'm just throwing fists just everywhere, just blindly, just punching things.
I'm trying to say nice things, but it's good stuff. Okay, so if you're still listening, thank you very much. You didn't have to do that. It's a holiday week, you know, but you wanted to get your fix of the Podcast of Champions. I hope we brought it. Hope you enjoyed it. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Make sure you check out Pac12podcast.com for all our last episodes, and we will talk to you next time. One last thing. I let Dave go, but I forgot to mention our picks for the week. For week 13, so we had Arizona State was a 3-point favorite over Arizona. We both, Dave and I both took ASU. Cal was getting 3 points against UCLA at home. I took UCLA -3. Dave took Cal getting 3. Oregon, 3-point favorite over OSU. Both Dave and I took Oregon State. Dave said outright. I could see that happening too. Stanford, 35.5-point favorite over Rice. Me and Dave both took Rice, even though we don't know much about him. That was just a lot of points. Colorado, -10.5 against Utah. I took Colorado and Dave took Utah. Just kidding. You know Dave loves Colorado. He took Colorado too. So 10.5-point favorite Colorado. Both Ryan and Dave are on that. Washington, 6-point favorite at Washington State. Dave's going to take the points. And the Cougs, I took Washington on the road, laying 6. Then USC is a 17-point favorite at home against Notre Dame. Both myself and Dave took USC to cover the 17. So thanks again for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions, and we'll talk to you next time.